on in recent years, and when I say recent, I would summarise that as being, let's say, in the last decade, you've been quite well known as being someone who is almost a campaigner against glyphosate, or someone who's at least trying to point out some of the negative effects of glyphosate. What is it in particular that you think is not so good about this herbicide?
Well, we have to look at agriculture as a system. And what we see with this particular herbicide is that it impacts all aspects of that system, both from effects on the plant, effects on the soil environment, especially that biological environment. And since its mode of action is really to increase susceptibility to disease, we see that effect carrying over to increase a number of our plant diseases that we used to have fairly effectively controlled through management and genetics, that with this chemical it nullifies much of that benefit that we've had in the past, as well as reduces the overall nutrient efficiency and an availability that we have for the crop that provided that resistance to give us excellent disease control. So the last 15 or 20 years, we've been seeing a number of diseases that were very effectively controlled through different management options that we're now referring to as re-emerging diseases that are having a very serious impact on our overall production efficiency and the quality of the crops that we're producing.
But how does it actually degrade in the soil? Is it as good as other herbicides that are available today at being broken down?
Well, glyphosate is immobilized very quickly because it's what we call a very strong chelator, so that it can bind with calcium and magnesium and iron and manganese and all of the positively charged mineral ions. And it's detoxified, but it's not necessarily degraded, so that it can accumulate for years. In some soils and other soils, it may have a fairly short half-life. But its effect is both from that direct chemical effect on other plants in the rotation, but it has a dramatic effect on many of our beneficial soil microorganisms. So if we look at soil ecology and its importance in maintaining nutrient availability for our crops, we see that this compound has a very deleterious effect on those organisms that increase the availability of our nutrients, very toxic to our nitrogen-fixing organisms for peas and lentils and other legume crops. So after a prolonged use, we see that those organisms can no longer even survive in our soil environment. If you're growing peas and lentils, 75% of our nitrogen is usually from activity of those organisms in the legume nodule. And if you can't maintain those, or if you have a glyphosate toxicity to those organisms, then it means that we're going to have to start supplementing with commercial fertilizers, because we no longer have that soil ecology that can support plant growth as we've known it in the past.
So if you're a farmer who is still committed to using glyphosate, what's your advice then to try and overcome what you're saying is that inability to fixate the nitrogen?
It means that we need to look at inoculation every time we plant, because we can't maintain a lot of those organisms in our soil. We have enough glyphosate residual activity, and we've also taken them out of that soil profile, and other organisms have taken their place that make it very difficult for them to reestablish. And so we need to look at nodulation or at inoculation to make sure that those organisms are present on the plant and they can work for us.
In layman's terms, what do you mean by inoculation?
This would be providing the bacteria at seeding time so that they can establish with the plant and provide that help for us from a nutritional standpoint to fix the atmospheric nitrogen rather than us having to provide fertilizer nitrogen to keep that plant functioning properly.
But at the talk that you attended yesterday here in Perth, I gather some of the farmers were questioning some of the things you were saying, because a lot of your research and your findings are from the United States or Canada, where they've been using GM crops for a lot longer than we have here in Western Australia. And also maybe they've overused them and relied on them and relied on glyphosate. If we use glyphosate as just one of the tools in a toolbox, do you think we may not see some of these detrimental effects that you're referring to?
Oh, I think that's accurate. And in the past, we used to always recommend chemical rotation, just like we used to recommend crop rotation, because we recognize that all of our compounds can have some deleterious effect. And the purpose of rotation was in order to give that soil a chance to heal or for a rebalancing before it got completely out of balance for us. And the difference that we've had from our current practice with glyphosate is that we've had 30 years of almost a monochemical, so that the effects on any particular group of microorganisms are effect in the soil environment as well as in the plant are just magnified to the point that then you start losing the ability to reverse that or for a ready reversal. So we didn't get into a lot of the situation overnight, and we're not going to be able to completely remediate that in just a one-shot effect. It's not a silver bullet type program. We really have to look at how we keep that overall agricultural system healthy and productive for us if we're going to have nutritional food and safe food.
So is a reversal quite difficult in the United States, do you think?
Yes. And the last 15 years of my research was really focused on how do we compensate for some of the negative effects of glyphosate and optimize that technology that we have. And to do that, you need to recognize, if you're growing a Roundup-ready crop, that it does two things. One is that just having the gene present reduces the nutrient efficiency for a lot of our micronutrients for that crop. And there are very excellent scientific papers that showing that reduction in manganese and zinc and other micronutrients especially, as far as just the reduced uptake and physiologic efficiency when the Roundup Ready gene is present. The other factor to consider then is that strong immobilizing effect of glyphosate once it's applied to those crops. And there isn't anything in the genetically engineered crop that does anything to glyphosate. All it does is make it possible for you to apply glyphosate directly to the crop without killing it. So that it's the effect of the chemical in reducing nutrient availability and function in the plant is still very much apparent in a Roundup Ready plant, just like it is in a non-Roundup Ready. And very low rates will reduce that efficiency as much as 70%. So if we want to maximize our genetic potential, then it means that we need to compensate for that reduced efficiency. And our growers didn't see it the first year or the second year in many of our good fertile soils, but after 7 or 8 years, when that soil can no longer provide those nutrients as efficiently as it used to because of the glyphosate impact on the soil biology and direct effect on and its chelating and immobilizing those nutrients in soil, then we've had to start addressing increased levels of micronutrient supplementation or fertilization. And we can do that and get a very excellent response. But if we don't recognize that, then we just have a continuing deterioration of our productive potential. We're seeing increased epidemics of diseases that 20 years ago we used to consider very wimpy pathogens that are now costing us literally billions of bushels of corn for the last 3 years. And this is a direct result of that reduced resistance and increased favorable environment for these pathogens to infect and cause much more severe disease than they would before.
But Owen McCarron, you're an agricultural consultant based here in Australia, travelling around at the moment with Don Huber. Are we talking about an objection to this particular herbicide, or are you more interested in educating farmers how to use it sensibly?
I'm certainly not presenting a view that says we should or shouldn't use glyphosate or GM crops. Don has 50 years of outstanding research behind him, and particularly in the last 10 or 15 years around the use of glyphosate. We've brought Don to Australia to educate and improve the knowledge of Australian farmers and allow them to assess how they need to manage for glyphosate use, how they need to manage for GM crops, particularly around nutrient impacts. In Australia, we're some of the most innovative farmers in the world, but I still think we lag behind parts of the world in crop nutrition in particular, and there's a direct correlation between the use of chemicals, the increase in disease, and the interactions between chemicals and nutrients that we need to be aware of so we can manage our crops better and improve our farming systems so we get the yield expectations that we set at the start of each year and realise them at the end of each season. If we can get our crop nutrition right, we can suppress some of these diseases that impact our crops significantly around Australia. It won't eliminate them. It won't eliminate the need for fungicidal activity or fungicidal products, but it may reduce the pressure on those fungicides that are in the market in the future, and they may be around longer if we can manage our crop nutrition better, particularly our trace elements. We do nitrogen and phosphorus very well. We manage those two elements well across Australia. In WA, we also manage our potassium well. But I don't think we yet understand the importance of trace elements in our cropping systems and making sure that they're each year to meet our yield expectations.
Don, what Owen's saying there, I suppose you could summarise as being management in the short term, but if you were going to be doing what you're doing in another 20 years' time, what would you like as a longer-term solution to what you see as some of these problems?
We certainly need to look at alternatives. We still need weed control, and glyphosate's been a very powerful tool for us in that process. We haven't recognised a lot of the side effects of glyphosate, and that's why we've abused it as badly as we have, as almost a monochemical approach to weed control.
Is there any other chemical we've abused more, do you think?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that nothing even comes close to what we've done with glyphosate, because we've considered it so safe and it's immobilized so readily, but we haven't recognized that it may not be degrading nearly as readily in the soils, and we haven't recognized the toxicity that it has as a residue in our food and our feed to our animals as well as to us.
So that's a genuine concern of yours, is it? The glyphosate ending up in our food chain and inside us?
At the levels that we're seeing in the U.S., we probably have the highest permitted levels of any country. And those levels are as much as 400 times higher than the documented toxicology for glyphosate on liver and kidney and our endocrine hormone system. And we're seeing reproductive failure. We're seeing a lot of those side effects, increasing human diseases that have both a direct and an indirect tie right back to glyphosate and the abuse of it.
Don, when we've chatted to you in the past, we've also chatted to other scientists who dispute what you're saying. You keep saying that the scientific evidence to prove your claims, the other side says that's wrong, there is no scientific evidence. What do you say in response to the other side?
Well, I can point to 130 plus papers as far as the effect of glyphosate on nutrient disease interactions, nutrient quality of the crops that we're eating. There's a growing number of very excellent international toxicology studies on glyphosate that document everything that I've said. I've yet to find one single peer-reviewed scientific paper that documents the safety of glyphosate. I've had discussions with people at USDA. I've had them with a number of other, with my colleagues who've said, well, it has to be safe because we've used it for 30 years and nobody's died. Yet if you look at the actual evidence, you find that glyphosate is one of the most common suicide chemicals that's used in several countries. Doesn't take a whole lot of it, very cheap, easy to access. But the greater concern is the long-term chronic effect of glyphosate that's being documented now, and we can associate that both with the direct toxicology papers that are out in the literature that have been peer-reviewed. They've been, in fact, we have several of them that have been court-mandated studies that document the toxicology of the proteins that are in our GM crops. But you can also look at that critical relationship between nutrition and our own human disease, manganese and iron and magnesium, and then look at the crops that we're producing, and we have a lot of empty calories in those crops. So we see increasing obesity, and we say, well, it's fast foods or it's people eating too much, but that's not really the full basis there, because we don't have those micronutrients so that the body can burn those carbohydrates that we consume. And so what the body does is it wants to get them out of the way, and so it stores them as fat around the waist. But the real problem is probably as much from a micronutrient deficiency in our own diets, because glyphosate reduces manganese in our crop as much as 45 or 50%. Magnesium is about a third lower, and you see the other micronutrients quite often much lower in our GM crops especially, so that we have both the direct effect of the chemical as a residue and its toxicology to mammalian tissues, as well as the overall reduced nutrient value from a mineral standpoint in the crops that we're producing now.
Well, here at the Perth Airport, we've been listening to the coffee machine getting cranked up and the tinkling of the coffee cups and the smell of the coffee. My apologies for holding you up for your first brew of the day, and thank you very much for chatting to the Country Hour here in Western Australia.
Well, thanks a lot, Richard. It's certainly a pleasure and an honour to be in Australia, an extremely hospitable country, and really a great privilege to be back after 25 years. So again, many thanks, and thanks to the people of Australia for this opportunity.